The meeting of the Planning and Zoning Board of the City of Winter Park for August 3rd, 2021 shall come to order. Let me begin by stating that the purpose of the Planning and Zoning Board is to review and make a recommendation on conditional uses, subdivisions, comprehensive plan amendments, land development code amendments, rezoning, and other ordinance affecting the development of property, and to make final decisions on applications for lakefront home approval. Any decision regarding lakefront homes under City Code Section 58-87 is under the purview of this board, and the board's vote is a final decision that will not be heard by the City Commission. The City Commission will consider the board's recommendations made tonight on other public hearing items on Wednesday, August 25th, 2021 at 3:30 p.m. or soon thereafter as may be heard, and the City Commission will make the final decision on such matters. You are encouraged to keep apprised on the status of such matters going before the City Commission by reviewing the City's website and upcoming City Commission meeting agendas. This meeting will proceed as follows. The chair or staff will announce each public hearing item as it appears on the agenda, which is available outside the front door. Staff will begin by making a presentation on each item and will provide the staff's recommendation. Next, we will hear from the applicant. After that, the floor will be open to the public for anyone who wishes to speak in support or in opposition to the request. After public comment, the applicant will be given an opportunity to respond to the public comments. Please approach the podium and state your name and address for the record. With the exception of ordinances proposing comprehensive plan amendments and land development code amendments, the public hearing matters coming before the board are mostly quasi-judicial in nature. For quasi-judicial matters, the board considers the testimony and evidence in the record at the hearing, and determines whether the applicable criteria for approval has been met. The testimony that you give to the board should be fully truthful in the same manner as if you were given sworn testimony in a court of law. In the interest of time, we ask that each person appearing before the board limit their comments to one appearance of 3 minutes. Large groups are asked to name a spokesperson. We ask that your testimony be relevant to the public hearing matter to which you are speaking, and avoid repeating arguments and testimony made by yourself or others. Order and decorum will be preserved at all times. Please address all your comments to the board and not to the audience. After all public input, the public comment period will be closed. The board members will then discuss, and we will vote on a recommendation to the City Commission with any conditions that may be appropriate. Please turn off or silence all mobile devices during these public hearings. The first item of business is the approval of the July 6, 2021 meeting minutes. I have a motion to approve.
I move we approve the minutes.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Mary, can you call the roll?
Yes. Mr. Stringfellow?
Aye.
Ms. Sarkeesian?
Here.
Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bornstein?
Yes.
Chairman James?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, the first item on our agenda tonight, public hearing item, is a subdivision or lot split request for the property at 280 East Lake Sioux Avenue, which is zoned R1AA. They're asking to split this one single property into two single family building lots. And there are some variances attached that we will discuss. Here you see the location of the property in question, lots 8 and 9 as originally platted. You see that they basically are 70 feet for each of those two lots fronting on East Lake Sioux, so 140 feet East Lake Sioux, and coincidentally, the exact same number as you're going down Winter Park Road. So what we do whenever we get one of these lot split requests is we do two things. We do what we call our zoning test, and we do what we call our subdivision code test. The zoning one is, does it meet the R1AA requirements? And R1AA has within it a minimum of 100 feet of lot width for any new lots and a minimum of 10,000 square feet for any new lots. In addition, our code says that when you have a corner lot, because you're supposed to put some extra setback in the distance the house is away from the corner, corner lots are supposed to have an extra 10 feet. So that would be 110 feet for a corner lot. So you can see with basically the two 70s that were short of the 100 or the 110 feet. And in recognition of the extra setbacks that are needed for the corner lot, the applicant does not desire to divide them exactly into 70 and 70 as they were platted. He'd like to divide them into 67 feet for the interior lot, and then put that extra 3 feet, 73 feet into the corner lot, because they have to compensate for the extra setbacks. But in reality, what they're asking to do is 270s just as they were originally platted. And so there are variances attached to this request. One of the lots meets the 10,000 square feet, the other doesn't. And so when we get variances, then we say to ourselves through the code, well, how does this compare to the neighborhood? Because if it compares favorably to the neighborhood in terms of being compatible with those lot sizes, then perhaps it's something that should be approved. But if it was markedly different, markedly smaller than what the characteristics are of the immediate area, then maybe we shouldn't be doing it because it doesn't fit in, is not compatible. And the code defines that analysis as the homes within a 500 foot radius that have the same zoning. And so this map shows the homes that go into that 500 foot radius as the crow flies. And there are 76 homes within that area. And the average lot width is 80 feet. There are a number of big lots. You know, when you have an especially big lot, that will skew an average, and those do exist in this area. And so what we like to do, rather than just use the average, is to do the median. What's the middle size lot between the smallest and the biggest in terms of the comparable? And the median lot width is 67 feet. And so that compares very favorably with what was originally platted and with what the applicant is requesting. Average lot size, a little bit bigger, 12.8. Median lot size, 10.5, a little bit bigger, though not necessarily significant. The other way of looking at this is, well, what is the lot sizes that are closest to this property in terms of that statistic, or what's the breakdown of the lots? And if you look in that area that the subdivision code tells us to look at, then we find that 63%, really two-thirds of the homes, are on similar 67 to 70 foot wide lots, and one-third are on bigger lots. So certainly a case can be made from those statistics that what they're asking for in terms of lot size matches two-thirds of what's around them. And it also matches the median lot size in the neighborhood. And when you look at that map, you'll see that on East Lake Sioux, all of the lots to the left, to the west, they're all 67 footers. If you look at the three lots directly below this lot, again, they're all 67, 70 footers. You look directly across the street, Winter Park Road Street, that is, and you'll see that those three houses and the two on the corner of Kingsway, as well as the rest of that north side of Kingsway, are again the 67, 70 footers. And it's the same pattern there on the north side of Kingsway. So the bigger picture, there's some bigger properties as you get further away, but two thirds, which would be the vast majority, are comparable to what the applicant is asking for. We were concerned a while back that when we got these lot splits, not only were we granting the ability to have two homes where there are one, but on our smaller lots, we have a 43% floor area ratio, and on the larger one, it's 38%. So in many cases, we were not only approving more homes, two versus one, but we were approving more square footage between the two lots that now could use 43%, now that they're approved smaller, than the 38%. So the code has been changed, and both of these lots will have to observe the 38% FAR. So there will be no more square footage of homes than can be built today. The only difference is they'll be built into two products versus just having one product on the property. And the applicant is aware of that. They have submitted some conceptual designs for what would be built. Often when we get these requests, the neighbors say, well, what are they going to build? So we require some generalized conceptual plans in terms of a site plan layout and elevation to answer the question, show the kind of home that the builder is anticipating. And so they, again, are not getting any more square footage, and they're not asking for any setback variances of any kind. So they're not getting any special permissions to do anything different than the normal single family zoning. So in these cases where you are sitting as a quasi-judicial board, and technically the staff is the experts on this matter, it is next to impossible for a city attorney to defend a lawsuit when a request is denied if the experts are the ones who say, yeah, you're supposed to approve it. So in these cases where variances are presented, the recommendation from city attorney is to recommend denial, but certainly you've heard plenty of statistics that are in conformance with our subdivision code test that would warrant and justify an approval by the Planning and Zoning Board in terms of your recommendation. So with that, I'll see if there's any questions, staff, before we ask the applicant to come up.
Jeff, what do the neighbors think? Any objections or favorites?
I have not heard from a single neighbor, but I believe the applicant has been doing some walking and door knocking. And so he's going to tell you what he's found from his experience.
Okay.
We haven't heard anything in favor or against here at the city.
But I take it staff is not taking a position on this request?
Correct, because of the variance that's associated.
Does staff take into consideration that there were previously platted lots of record? I've noticed on the map in the previous pages, mm-hmm. it looks like they were originally platted at 70.15 and 70.2.
Mm-hmm. We certainly... staff recognizes that, and the board can recognize that and note that on all of the other individual platted lots in that block, every single one of them has a house on each one of the original platted lots. This is the only one that has just one house on two platted lots.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Jeff? Would the applicant like to speak?
Thanks for having me. My name is Clay Wooten. I'm with Wooten Built. I'm working with the owner regarding this request. Jeff went over most of the bullet points, I think, that are important. Might be helpful just to take a quick look at what the elevations and what the lot splits will look like, which I have in this presentation. But first, I'd like to answer the question as far as what the neighbors think. I had to wait until after I got the elevation and site plan renderings to start knocking on doors because I knew everyone would be asking the same question. You know, what are you going to build? And I do have a number of signatures from people in the 500-foot radius area. The majority of the people that I focused on were in the immediate orbit there, you know, right there along Lake Sioux and Winter Park Road. I didn't presume that people, you know, two blocks away inside would care more or less, but, you know, because I think that these two lots or these lots impact the people immediately surrounding them more. And some of the, I will say that in that, the northern part of that radius, there's a group of activists there who are very vocal and were vocal in a prior lot split application within the last few years. And I sat down with them. And though I haven't received signatures, they gave me a general approval in favor of this with what I'm presenting versus the alternative, which is, well, sell it to someone who can build up to a 7,600 square foot, ultra-modern or otherwise looking house. Because they certainly don't want to look at that every day. This at least, you know, there's some, this would build a couple of homes that are more, that conform to the immediate neighborhood. And for people up and down the street at, on Lake Sioux, Pennsylvania, Winter Park Road, help provide some newer comparable sales. Within the last year, homes on those high traffic streets, there's only been two homes that, and actually, and they just sold within the last year that sold over $1 million. And this is one on Glen Ridge and one on the corner of Wright and Winter Park Road. And so most of the neighbors were understood that this a lot split and these two builds would help their, would ultimately help the value of their home because they would be directly comparable versus a larger. So I'll just go through this really quickly. As you can see, here's the aerial view of the lot with the, and you see, Jeff had a slide similar to this. Here's the setback coverage worksheet shows that, you know, the lot as it is can hold up to 7,448 square foot floor area ratio. That's at 38%. And here's the setbacks based upon the current lot and the general footprint. And that's drawn pretty much to scale as far as what the setbacks would be if someone were to build a single house on there. Here's our proposed site plan. It's turned sideways. North is to the left side where East Lake Sioux is. Winter Park Road, which is on the east, is on the upper side there. And again, these are two renditions that, you know, to give an idea of what we could and would like to build. They would need to be, just because of the nature and size of the lots, front entry garages, but we do have the ability with the room, the width of the lots, to have a turnaround apron so people aren't trying to back in and out of Lake Sioux. And we do have a good amount of setback from Winter Park Road. Also, a note to be made is I don't believe, you know, based on the tree survey, I don't believe that there's any protected trees that need to be removed in order for this to happen either. It's, the lots are pretty clear, except for, you know, a few random, but they're not protected trees. This is the elevation of the house that we created for the corner lot, which is, you know, it's more of a, it's a lot of traditional features, but has a contemporary flair, kind of a coastal architectural that everyone that we showed these to had, you know, appreciated, liked the pitch to the roofs, and felt it would fit nice into the area. And then the second house on the inside would be, here's again, these are concepts for the most part. But this is what would be more considered a modern farmhouse look that we've seen going up throughout Winter Park that has, you know, again, a lot of traditional features and some contemporary features as well. Again, yeah, the advantages for the lot split, again, would be the two new lots would conform most to the surrounding homes there. And once these are built and sold, they should help drive those. If it's built as a 7,500 square foot lot as it's currently platted, it won't affect the value, the immediate value of the homes around up and down the street. It would not be considered a comparable sale. Of course, here you can provide some parameters on what's being built when those parameters cannot be applied outside of code. If someone were not to split and would do a build to suit, which would be the alternative if the split doesn't happen. And here's a more recent lot split that's down the street. There's a builder who split and built two homes. This shows the lot split. It's the blue outlined lot and then the one just to the left of it. And those were built, there were two new homes built there. And you can see that those lots were actually a little skinnier than the surrounding lots, but their depth made up for it as far as for lot size. And then here's the other one. So if there's any questions, any other questions, I'm happy to answer for you.
Yes. Corner lot's about 3,200 square foot, and the inside lot's about 2,800 square feet.
The size of the homes, yes.
And it appears that both of these homes will be market priced over $1 million.
Yes.
Okay.
Questions? Yeah, in terms of access of the driveways, is there a particular reason why you didn't want to come off for the corner lot? Come off of Winter Park Road? I'm just thinking of stacking.
It's a great question. And I've sent, again, this was an initial drawing. We would like to bring up that option by moving the garage around to the side to come off of Winter Park Road just because of the proximity of the four-way stop there.
Yeah.
I think it probably would make more sense. And we are very open to bringing it around just like they did.
On your example.
Yeah, in the example for... let's see, which one is it?
I think it's that second one.
It's the second one, yeah. That where they fit the garage into the side too, and I think that would work better and be less crowded there and work nicely.
Yeah, that's really my only comment. I would just consider
that's I'm glad you brought that up because I meant to bring that up here.
Any further questions? Okay, let's see what the public has to say. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public here that would like to address this application? Okay, Mary, is there anybody online?
We do have one attendee online. If that attendee would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature and I will unmute you. They are not raising their hand at this time.
Okay, then we will close public comment and the board will discuss this. Does anybody want to present first?
Well, I think this is a good project, and home design fits the neighborhood, and it will add value to the neighborhood, whereas a 7,500 square foot mansion would be out of keeping with the neighborhood. And if you look to the right, I guess that's the southeast corner of Lake Sioux and Winter Park Road. There's a similar situation there, a little smaller. I don't know if that's built up with houses or not. Can we go back to that? What's on that corner?
Let's see.
I'll keep going back. See.
Keep going back to
there.
All right.
To the right.
On the east side of Winter Park?
To the right on the opposite side of the street, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Over, you mean the two lots that are split there? Or
are they bare, or are there houses on?
No, there's houses on them. Houses on the two right across.
And I apologize, I should have gone out and looked at these. My failure. Okay, thank you.
I tend to agree. I think it's consistent with the platting that was done, who knows when, maybe in the 50s or before. It's just taken too long.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I guess I'll turn this way. I think I agree. I think it's consistent with the plat. There we go. I think it's consistent with the historical plat and how the lots have been split over time. It just happened to be two lots that hasn't been split in the past. So I think it's consistent, you know. I think just considering alternative driveway location makes sense, which the applicant has agreed. Other than that, I think it's compatible and consistent with what we're seeing in the neighborhood.
Okay. I agree with Alex. I think if you could just shift the garage on the one, fits.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Shouldn't have said anything.
You're in trouble now.
Mic him up.
Okay. If I breathe heavy, they'll hear it though.
I'm making the motion. I'll make a motion to approve the property split at 280 East Lake Sioux Avenue, zoned R1 AA into two single family building lots. The request by Wooten Built Inc. for the split.
I'll second.
Mary, can you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Sarkeesian?
Approved.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Mr. Stringfellow?
Yes.
And Ms. Vickers, I believe.
Approved.
Vice Chair Bornstein?
Yes.
Chairman James?
Yes.
So what was the vote? 6-0?
Melissa's here. She voted from the back row.
I've been listening, sorry, online.
7-0 in favor.
So what was the vote, 6-0?
7-0.
Everybody's here? Yeah, okay.
Okay, moving on.
The next item on our agenda is two items that are heard as one request. And what this deals with is the fact that the city annexed two properties on Harold Avenue, 647 and 653. Into the city. Way back 1980, when we annexed the corridor, there was actually a quote unquote retirement home on this property with registered voters. So we couldn't annex it because we would have had to have a actual voter referendum of that house in terms of whether they wanted to come in. So it's in essence an enclave of the county that was surrounded by the city, but now it's vacant. The property owners wanted to come into the city to get access to our sewer, so we've annexed it. But once you annex it, then we have to establish our comprehensive plan map designation and our zoning designation, which in this case is very easy because in the county it was designated commercial and zone commercial. Then we bring it in the city and we're going to designate a commercial and zone a commercial C3. And so that's the explanation. Any questions? Happy to answer.
Any questions? Are there any public comments?
We have one attendee still online. If that attendee would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature and I'll unmute you. They are not raising their hand at this time.
Okay, then we will close public comments on this item. And anybody on the board have anything to say about this? All right. Alex, would you like to make a motion?
Oh, sure. Now, do I have to read the whole line?
For the record.
You don't have to read the entire line, but as much as is descriptive to give the record indication of what we're voting on.
All right. I make a motion to approve the comp plan amendment 21-05 and rezoning, a request for an annexation of the property described by staff. Motion to approve.
Second.
That motion for the record includes, is that for both ordinances or just the first? The two ordinances, comp plan amendment and a zoning, your motion includes both ordinances, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mary, can you call the roll, please?
Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Mr. Stringfellow?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sarkeesian?
Yes.
Vice Chair Borenstein?
Yes.
Chairman James?
Yes. Okay, who gets to present CPA 2106? Bringing up the big guy.
Good evening, everyone. The next item we have is a bit of a unique item that I'm very quickly going to punt to our city attorney, which may be news to him. But we have an ordinance amending Chapter 58 of the Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, to add a new property rights element, including new goals and objectives, goals, objectives, and policies for this element pursuant to House Bill 59, Growth Management. Essentially, we have a mandate from the state to adopt a new element of our comprehensive plan and present that to DEO, the Department of Economic Opportunity, which has a the kind of the planning division within it, which oversees all comp plans, major comp plan amendments, and depending on what exactly you're doing, has different levels of involvement in that. But basically, the law says that until we adopt this property rights policy, we can make no further official changes to our comprehensive plan. Couldn't do such wonderful things such as adopt a Orange Avenue overlay. And so we've presented this to our commission, who had concerns. There are a number of groups throughout the state who have different interpretations of what they think maybe some of the language should be. We've seen a lot of that and have concerns with a lot of that language. So staff is recommending the adoption of the language as shown in here, but we did make some minor changes that I will now turn over to the city attorney to discuss
Oh, you got yours?
You have it up there.
For the screen. And this is just what you sent me.
All right, very good. As Bron said, we have a legislative mandate to adopt a property rights element in our comp plan, which is a separate element than the future land use element, which I find kind of interesting. It doesn't actually go into the part of the comp plan that regulates the development of property, but it is a statement that I'm still puzzled about, because it just requires the city to adopt the statement to say that we will consider four type of property rights that I don't believe that we infringe on anyway. And it's sort of obvious, and even the statements are qualified. For instance, the state is mandated to say that we shall consider in our decision-making the right of the property owner to possess, control their interest in their property, including easements, leases, and mineral rights, and the right of a property owner to use, maintain, develop, and improve his or her property for personal use, or any other property or person subject to state law and local ordinances, which is, you know, a huge qualifier, essentially saying everyone has a right to use their property subject to our ordinances, and the right of the property owner to privacy, exclude others from the property to protect their possessions, and the right of the property owner to dispose of his or her property through sale or gift. Three of those four rights, it's hard for me to even think of examples where we regulate those things. With respect to number two, the qualifier is subject to our ordinances, which would be a comp plan or our land development regulation. So I'm really not sure what the motivation was here, but of course, as Bron said, we have a mandate. If we don't do it, then we cannot amend our comp plan, which is problematic. There was discussion amongst the commission with what I had presented as a bare minimum ordinance to adopt what the state mandated. And the commission's direction was to propose some counter language that talked about citizen rights, public rights to participate, to be heard, the right to notice. And so what we sent out, the staff sent out to you, was my attempt to balance this property rights element with points of view of not only recognizing the respect for these property rights that the legislature has mandated that we put in our comp plan, but also to signify respect for the people's right to participate in the decisions that affect their lives and their property. And so I've done that in the language that we proposed in 10.2 and 10.3. 10.1 is the mandate from the state. Policy 10.2 is a statement that the persons affected by proposed land use and zoning decisions have the right of notice of public hearings, the right to present testimony and evidence, to participate essentially in public hearings, and that the city will ensure its land development regulations that we provide adequate public notice, which we do already, and also that we'll consider from time to time making additional changes to have better processes in place to inform the public of proposed changes to our comp plan, zoning, and our land development regulations. Policy 10.3 is a statement that it recognizes that residents, property owners, business owners may rely or look at our comp plan and our land development code from time to time and make decisions based on the existing provisions, and that we'll consider the impacts of changes that we may make to our comp plan and our land development regulations on the reliability and predictability of our governing land use documents, and to consider the best interest of our citizens and our health, safety, and welfare when we enact changes. I also got suspicious of the policy that's being mandated by the state, and I just don't understand the point of it, but I inserted objective 10.1, some language indicating that our point of doing this is to not create new property rights or due process rights that don't already exist in the law, but only recognize what we're required to recognize. And we're not, by articulating things to consider, standards for making quasi-judicial decisions, when in fact comp plan amendments and land development regulations are legislative changes. We're not constraining or creating a higher standard for making policy decisions, because there are so many other factors other outside of these property rights that we all consider when we're changing our plan. So we're not attempting in this language to turn legislative decisions into quasi-judicial ones. And also that we're not mandating upon ourselves some requirement that we have to, in every city staff report, in every public hearing, articulate how we've considered each of these things. We're not required to have expert reports to analyze every tweak in our comp plan and how it impacts the right of a property owner to possess and control their interest. So I've made that statement just to cover us in case someone were to claim, well, you didn't consider these things because there was nothing in the staff report that addressed these. It's sort of self-evident that if the commission ultimately adopts changes in its plan, or its land development regulation, that we've considered these items. So that's all I have for you. If you have any questions, please ask.
Thank you. Questions, guys?
Yeah, I have questions. What would this look like if it were the bare minimum language required by the state?
That's in your original packet from whenever it was posted. I don't know if you have that, but essentially it's half of goal 110, talking about the purpose and overall goal for the property rights element is to signify respect for judicially acknowledged and constitutionally protected property rights. And then it would say we're providing in the objective 10.1, providing a framework for ensuring private property rights and the rights, those rights. And then it would be policy 10.1. And you wouldn't have most of the language in 10.2, objective 10.2, you wouldn't have any of the language in policy 10.2 or policy 10.3. or anything beyond the first sentence of objective 10.1.
This is more of a statement than a question, but in my mind, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Property rights are already, and I said this earlier, property rights in this country are already guaranteed by the Bill of Rights, by the Fifth Amendment. There is nothing in here that assures anybody of anything other than what they already have. And enumerating rights like this just begs the question of, you know, what else should we also enumerate? Do we need to specify the right for people to wear flip-flops on a Saturday? Do we need to specify the right of somebody to sunbathe in their backyard? I mean, the whole thing is just ridiculous. If I had any question, I've wondered if there's any jurisdictions out there that have thought about suing the state for this mandate, which would be a total waste of time on the one time and money on the one hand, but would make more sense than this property rights element. So if we are mandated and we have to approve this, my recommendation would be to do it in the most bare bones way possible and to move forward on that basis, to not add any other language that could come back to haunt the city in the future, and to move forward in that way.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think there's actually two other jurisdictions that I'm working in that are rushing to get this through because they have pending comprehensive plan amendments that are, one had to be pushed back and another is coming up. So they threw this thing together, got it on the docket, and they're trying to charge forward. So I agree. I think it's checking a box. I have some speculation as to where this came from. particularly related to some changes in larger jurisdictions, zoning and comprehensive plan and Burt Harris and takings and so forth. Not that it really is going to change how people litigate, like you said, property rights. So whatever simple gets this through and kind of gets it out of the way of staff and keeps business operating for the city, I'm in support of.
Any other comments?
I respectfully disagree. I think that this is something that if the state needs us to lay this out for the public, then we need to lay this out. I think that the rights listed in 10.1, 10.2, and 10.3, while maybe obvious, but they're important. And if that's what we need to do to, you know, have it in writing and have it public notice and have people know about this, then that's what I think we should do. I don't think it hurts anybody to have 10.2 and 10.3 in there.
I will say that the city of Winter Park probably has the most robust notice requirements of any jurisdiction I've ever encountered, with citywide notice. And we do go above and beyond to make sure even, you know, courtesy notices that aren't required statutorily, we already trend in this direction, because we believe that everyone should have the ability to, the right to know. And, you know, citywide notice, our criteria is not very high in some cases. And yeah, we may have one coming up, so we'll see. we tend to get a pretty good crowd when those come out, but yeah, we certainly understand the both sides of the coin here. So
Alex, the other jurisdictions that you've seen, is it, are they just doing the, just taking and copying and pasting, or?
Yeah, I think based on time, I think they actually just had their, one of them's having the council hearing, or they had a council hearing on it last night. So they didn't spend any extra time on it. Not that I think it might be valuable. I don't have a dog in the fight either way, keeping it bare bones or adding these additional due process languages. I guess for me, I think as long as we can kind of get this moving and down the road, that'd be my recommendation, just passing it along. So I think they just copied and pasted it and just trying to get it on the other end. They also were dealing with some Burt Harris litigation about rights related to a change in their comprehensive plan. So this was kind of teed up and top on their radar anyways. So I'm not an attorney. I don't see anything problematic with what was added here, but you know, it could be very, very simple just to keep business going as usual. So, you know, I think whatever is simplest and kind of gets this ball rolling is what I feel comfortable with.
Further comments? The board. Michael, you want to make a motion to do something with this?
Sure.
I like that you pick somebody to do the most. That's good.
I move to approve CPA 21-06, request of the City of Winter Park for an ordinance amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, so as to add new property rights element, including new goals, objectives, and policies, pursuant to House Bill 59, Growth Management.
I'll second.
Thank you. Mary, can you call the roll, please?
Actually, do we need to see if we have any public comment?
Oh.
Being an ordinance.
Couldn't remember if we'd done that or not.
I have a feeling everyone's going to want to talk about this.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Packed house.
Yeah. Looking out there, I somehow failed to recognize all the hands.
Does any of my staff have anything to to say on this?
Mary, anybody online that needs to talk to this?
We do have two attendees online. If either attendee would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature and I will unmute you.
While we're doing that, I probably should clarify, the motion would be to approve the version that has the three different policies, not just the one that was in the original agenda packet. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay,
we're going to close public comment. And Michael, do you accept the friendly amendment? Yes, the version that's laying here on our desk that has 10.1, 2, and 3. Thank you. Okay, Mary, please call the roll.
Yes. Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Mr. Stringfellow?
Yes.
Ms. Sarkeesian?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Borenstein?
No.
Chairman James?
Yes. Okay, to see if we have any staff updates, like a replacement for Allison already, maybe?
I'm wondering why she didn't show up for work yesterday. Still, but no, we do have the ad out there and hope we can find someone to replace her. She is certainly an integral part of our team that kind of kept the engine running. So I offered the job to our city attorney, who laughed and turned me down. I don't know why. I said it may be slightly less money, but we have a great office culture and it's a pretty good time. So hoping he reconsiders, but otherwise if any of you in the planning industry have any folks with some planning and management experience, we hope to be able to replace that position soon. It's certainly one that that is key. But other than that, it is budget season, and so we've started to have budget hearings with the city commission, where each department has presented their budgets and forecasts for the upcoming year. And from our department, nothing too major. It's really more on the transportation side where our growth is, and we'll have a pretty heavy emphasis on working on the transportation master plan coming up in the next year. But other than that, this will be our last work session that we'll be having in person. So our regular meetings will continue to be in this room, in this general setup here, where it works very well for the five people on the commission, but our larger boards, we're always the first of the month. So we get to kind of try to see how things work. And I think this is going to work for us. When we go into work session, we're just going to probably have Alex turn and face you, and there's no real pecking order of who sits higher or lower. We'll try to rotate, but
I don't mind being down here.
Yeah. But all of our work sessions will be virtual until further notice. The city commission is taking the COVID situation very seriously, obviously has reinstituted the mask policy, is doing as much as they can to educate the public, provide opportunities for people to get their vaccination. If you ever have any questions on where to send folks for vaccinations, we're doing events at the farmers market and trying to do whatever we can to promote that, and with our staff as well. And we sure hope that we can put this in the rearview mirror there. But other than that, I don't have any major updates at this point. So happy to answer any questions you may have on anything.
How about our proposed new rules for how much time we're going to give people, since the next official meeting will be the OAO. We're going to have mobs in here. It would be nice to say we have perhaps a new rule or two.
Yes, and with that one, though we will be meeting in person, we are going to very much encourage folks to provide their input virtually, because seating in here will be very limited when we have, while we try to keep, you know, proper social distancing, even with masks, room such as this is not the right place to put a lot of people. And so, you know, staff will have a presentation, but we are not going to go through the entire document because we're really going to concentrate on the comp plan, as we will get into in our work session later this evening. And so we will set up again the virtual meetings a little tougher to have, but I think we can still, if you let me know any topics in particular that you'd like to cover, just like tonight, you asked me to kind of bring the basics of the comp plan. And then also you asked for the renderings that have been used and coming to the current version of the OAO. And so, and also staff is available to meet individually in person at an appropriate distance with masks, or we are, one of my favorite places is the rocking chairs out front of City Hall, and or set up individual Zoom meetings. We are happy to do that too. We understand that this kind of throws a little bit of a wrench in our timeline that was a pretty tight to begin with. So we will do everything that we can to accommodate that. And I will tell you that, unfortunately, the only member of the planning staff who knows anything about the overlay is yours truly, with Allison gone now. Jeff will be happy to send you right my way if you call him. So, I'm here to help in any possible way I can. So, and that's all I've got for tonight. We will work with the city attorney to take the discussions we had on some of our kind of suggested guidelines for how to run meetings. Again, I would recommend flexibility within those guidelines, because not every meeting is going to be the same, but we can work with the city attorney to make sure those are in a format that keeps us out of trouble. So I can have that for our next meeting.
I did have one thing to ask that would doesn't need to take place tonight or really at a priority, but I think it would be interesting to go over. It's House Bill 403, which has been enacted by the state of Florida that relates to home occupation law. Yeah, I did send that to you. It's similar to a change that's kind of trickled down from the top, but allows for a lot more rights of people to utilize their home as a business. And I think just for the board's purposes, I think it'd be good to know.
And I'm sure you noticed a lot of the same things I did, where right now it doesn't allow people who live outside of the home to be a part of a home-based business. But now those people are allowed to be a part of it, but it can create no new traffic to the home. So how those people get there, I'm really not sure. But
yeah, it's an interesting one.
I sent it to our attorneys and certainly to our code enforcement staff, because it does create some unique challenges to that. And as we require business certificates for any of the businesses operating within the city, it's an interesting one. So I think it's great to discuss those things that we kind of don't see coming, and they get here and we go, okay, we're gonna have to rewrite a lot of our code in order to accommodate this. So you bet, happy to do that.
Excellent, thanks.
Okay, any
other— let's put that on as a discussion item for the next meeting.
Any other board comments? Well, then we will adjourn and reformulate as a work session after a 5-minute break.
Okay. Let's make it 10 if we can, because I think we have
minute break, of course.
Do we have? Ta-da.